the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire, Arizona Cardinals site, and back on a regular schedule as we get ready for training camp has begun. This is episode 366, and I am with Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation's family of sites, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. You know, this would normally be just our training camp preview, but we can't just talk about training camp because, honestly, this is training camp starting is like third in the pecking order, isn't it, with the sequence of events that happened in the last week?
Yeah, there's a lot going on, and I'm glad they waited until you and I were back from our hiatuses to do all the contracts.
Oh, totally. The big news, obviously, was Kyler Murray inked to a contract extension. That's the main focus of what we're going to talk about. So we're going to talk about the Kyler Murray deal. We're going to talk about, as well, the announcement of the alternate black helmet. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about that because that's let's be honest, people of your age and my age tend to care far less about what they wear on the field. That is definitely something that is, yeah, sort of a generation beyond us. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, while everyone wants is pleading for new uniforms, and I have people who ask me on Twitter, hey, if you're at the presser, ask Kyler about my uniforms. There's no way in the world I'm asking Kyler about uniforms when there's so many other things to ask Kyler about. But we'll talk a little bit about that. And then we'll get into the major storylines of training camp. Because as of today, Tuesday, we're recording on a Tuesday night, Tuesday the 26th, the Cardinals did report to training camp. The veterans reported they took the conditioning test. So training camp is officially underway, and the preseason is just around the corner, which means football for real is just around the corner. Let's start things off talking about the Kyler Murray deal. The deal broke last week, and yes, I was very happy that it didn't happen while I was traveling with my wife. And although it did happen while I was at work, in the middle of a meeting, and so I did have I had a draft in there that I had pre-written in case the deal went down at the beginning of July. What it is, breaking down the numbers overall, so what they're calling it, 5-year extension worth $230.5 million. So he is now under contract with the Cardinals through 2028, and in terms of what they say publicly, $230.5 million, a 5-year extension. That's an average of $46.1 million per year and $160 million guaranteed. More than $100 million is fully guaranteed at signing. A couple of important metrics. One, that average per year is second only to Aaron Rodgers. The total contract tops Deshaun Watson's by $500,000. And the guarantees are second only to Deshaun Watson. The reality is it isn't, while the money is the money, it's not as valuable as it says, as what's being reported. Nonetheless, what?
It never is, though.
No, that's what people
struggle with.
And so, just number one, impact. How impactful and important was it to get the deal done before training camp started?
I thought it was important just because it kind of soothed everybody's nerves about it, right? So this was a huge deal that continued to be a huge deal to a lot of people because they're like, oh, well, you know, it needs to get done. It needs, well, yeah, it did need to get done. And, you and I have been told since May that this was going to happen in June. I don't know if it, why it got delayed in June. Don't care. The person that told us this came back and said they're saying now July. There is some things that we can look at and say we know how the Arizona Cardinals operate. They don't like to ruffle feathers around the league. And one of the things that would have ruffled feathers around the league is giving him an extension before the draft, before, you know, workouts, before OTAs. Like, it typically happens.
That would have reset the timeline for fourth year extensions, which,
right,
it would have set a new precedent, which the Cardinals don't like to do. Well, and I'm sure there's a reason for it, but. And then they went and did something else, as we're going to talk about, which is seemingly unprecedented. But yeah.
Right. And so like, it was just silly that it took that long. But at the same time, I was like, okay, it's done now. Like that's all that we've kind of been waiting for, right? So it got done. You know, you look at all of this, and it just seems like they're in a good spot, that the team, that everybody's kind of on the same page, and that is what, let's be honest, is really important, is that, you know, all these guys come in together ready to go on the same page.
And more importantly, now it's done. And so there is no more, like, granted,
for a long time. I mean, this is locking it down for 6 years. Like, it's 2028. That's when we have to start this thing.
And if this show is still going on in 2028. Yeah, I hope we're still doing this. And if so, wow, we'll be old.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be like Jess's age at that point.
I'll be in my 50s.
Yeah, I'll be 42. So yeah.
Ooh.
But yeah, it's just like, yeah, you just look at it, man. Like, this was just something that had to get done, and it's good to see that it's done and it's over with, and we can go back to normal at this point, right?
Right. Did you have a problem with the numbers? So the amount of the total deal, the $46.1 million per year average, the guarantees. Was there any part of the initial numbers that you said, I don't like it?
No, because, again, you and I have kind of known this was coming, right? We've kind of figured that this is what they were going to do. And we've talked about this, man. At the end of the day, this is on them. They had a chance, allegedly. I mean, we're going to use the word allegedly on a lot of this, but they allegedly had the chance to sign him in January, February to a 4-year, or I mean, it was basically a 4-year, 6-year contract for about $35 million less guaranteed, and about, I think it was, what, $40 million less overall?
Roughly, yeah.
And
the per year average would have been less. It cost them more money significantly because they waited, which, you know, they had their reasons, but other quarterbacks got extensions. Matthew Stafford got an extension. Aaron Rodgers got an extension. Deshaun Watson got an extension, which then reset the quarterback market. Yeah, I didn't have a problem with the numbers at all.
I think we heard
$46 million average was the target that we were expecting. And honestly,
well, and I like petty when they go to 46.1. It actually makes me happy to see that stuff.
Oh yeah, like the idea is, you know, Deshaun Watson got $230 million. No, $230 million and a half.
Right, it's so stupid, but I like it. It's just, it makes it more intriguing and fun. Like,
now the truth of the matter is, and if you look at the 7 years, because it's not exactly, it is a 5-year extension, but it's not like the new money. It's $230.5 million in new money, and they're adding 5 years to his contract. But it's not like the $230 million was starting in 2024. That's where that's where some of the way that they are publicized is a little misleading. The way they publicized, for example, DeAndre Hopkins' extension made it look less than it was, when it was really like a 2-year. It was the Hopkins deal almost that reset the receiver market, because he basically got 2 new years or the same amount of years, and just gave him $50 million extra to do it. But the way the Cardinals, you know, publicized it made it look worth less. In this case, the deal is actually worth less per year, actually, than $46.1 million. Because the truth of the matter, he's getting a little more than he's getting $230 million between now in the next 7 years. So it's really, the per year average comes down to about $37 to $38 million per year, which, if you look at that in terms of quarterback pay, there is not that's right in the sweet spot of very good quarterbacks.
We don't do nuance, Jess. Hard and fast numbers. There's no nuance to anything. You know, we have to put it up there that he's the second highest paid quarterback in the league.
And you need that for the agents. You need that for it's good for the team, because that shows the team doing something. It's publicity for the team, even though the team doesn't release contract information. And it's really good for his agent, Eric Burkhardt. It's good for the public side of things. But the truth is, he's not making $46 million per year over the next 7 years. He's making an average of about $37 to $38 million per year, which, wow, that's an absurd amount of money to pay someone for really anything. That's not top of the market quarterback money.
No, it's not. And so to see it, you know, it makes it hard to swallow. I understand. But at the same time, you're paying what you get for what you get, and what you get is one of the most exciting young players in the NFL.
And honestly, structurally, I really like how it is structured, because now there's no way to avoid the cap hit eventually. And you know, the cap is going up. But I think that the Cardinals did a very good job of structuring things in a way that, on the player side, that he has a constant cash flow during the year. So he will get workout bonus. He'll get roster bonuses in March, workout bonuses in May and June. And then on some, like for the first couple of years, his yearly salary, because if you don't know how NFL players are paid, that typically how that works, they are paid only during the NFL season. They'll get a per diem for workout bonuses and training camp, but their salary, their game checks, it doesn't happen till the season. Then in the offseason, they don't get money. So you have to be able to manage your money. But it's structured in such a way that he gets roster bonuses and option bonuses, and then late in career, he'll have a training camp bonus, so that there's a cash flow throughout the calendar year. And that's important for players. I think they did a very good job cap-wise, because while his cap number does go up a little bit this year, that was inevitable unless he was taking no new money this year, which never made sense that was going to happen. The cap is still, it's a low $12.7 million this year and only $16 million next year. So we're looking at these next 2 years as the competitive window to load things up before the cap goes up. And you kind of look ahead the next 2 years. Kyler's cap number is really low. Then it jumps up to more than $51 million, and he's anywhere between $43.5 million and $55.5 million against the cap over the next 5 seasons after that. But I love the way this contract is structured. I love the creativity with which the Cardinals gave him all this money in a number of different ways to make sure that he's getting a constant cash flow. He's getting $30 million this year. He's going to get another $39 million next year, and he's going to have a total of like $103, $106 million that he will have been paid through 2024. The way that basically, and it makes it so it locks him in absolutely, basically absolutely is through 2027, it's going to be hard to move him. Because in 2024, his 2025 salary and bonus guarantee. In 2025, his 2026 salary guarantees. And in 2026, his salary guarantees for the next season. And so you almost have to, you would have to go out of your way, much like if we think back to the Tyrann Mathieu deal, they had to take a really big hit because if they didn't, then it was going to trigger guarantees for the next year. And so they're really tying themselves to Murray. And then if they're going to have to move him, they're going to take a serious hit to do that. And I like that concept. I love how the contract is structured. I really like, there's nothing about the actual financials I dislike at all. Any other thoughts on the basics of the deal?
No, I think, you know, we covered a good amount of it. It was a strong deal for the team. I thought they, you know, I thought they were able to really figure out how to keep everybody happy, which is not easy in this day and age, right? And I thought that was a big thing that they needed to accomplish. And, you know, quite frankly, I thought they did it. You know, we'll talk shortly about, you know, some of the oddities of it, but, you know, the reality is this got done. It's over. It's done with. We can stop talking about it for 6 years. I mean, well, I'm sure every time he has a bad game, we'll be like, see, I can't believe they extended it. But like, we don't have to talk about it for like 6 years, which is nice.
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk of the weather. Let's come back, talk a little bit more about the deal, sort of the minutiae, some of the interesting clauses and addendums, the bonuses, some of the things that some takeaways that we get from the contract. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. There are a number of interesting things that stand out about this Kyler Murray deal. And the one that is getting the most play across the media in the entire nation, every network is talking about it, NFL Network, every analyst on NFL Network and ESPN are talking about it, and that is the independent study clause that was, for however that happened, that was reported on Monday, that the Cardinals added an addendum that requires Kyler to do at least 4 hours of outside of team meetings, that he must do at least 4 hours of independent game preparation study, or he will be in default. 4 hours a week is not that much, and specifically that it also had language to clarify so that there is no confusion. I think even the verbiage of the addendum had something to avoid confusion, that he must do his game film study without, you know, that it can't be, he actually has to be the one watching it. It can't be on while the TV is on, while he's playing video games. So it was very specific. And there's been a lot said about this. Because it's obviously the one thing, I don't know, there's no good look for this. That's the main takeaway. It's just the look. There's no good look for it because it makes it look like the Cardinals don't trust him. It makes him, is he not preparing? What's your take on the independent study addendum?
I don't care, but I mean, because it is something that's talked about, it just makes me laugh that Michael Bidwell's such a zoomer, right? Like,
he's like, because this was, from what we're hearing from multiple sources, John Gambadoro at Arizona Sports and Kyle Odegaard, he used to work for the team, now works, so it runs compare.bet site. So it makes him look less credible than he is because he was a team reporter for the team. But is that basically this was Michael Bidwell insisted on this verbiage in there, while there were those in the organization that were trying to keep him from putting it in. It's such a weird look. It really is.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, but it, again, it just, like, I get it. Like, it's tough. The dude plays a lot of video games. All right. I mean, as long as he's showing up for class and, you know, like, isn't causing issues. And like, I don't know. It's just such a weird thing. I mean, you're a teacher. So, like, this is akin to, like, the one of the smartest kids in your class is like, hey, is it cool if I watch Netflix when I'm done with all my assignments? And you're like,
no, what? You have to do 4 hours of study.
Right. And it's just, I mean, I get it. Like, people lost their mind over the New York Times article. And we've always known one of the things about the Bidwells is they like to look, they like, I'm trying to think of the word, because it's funny that a team that is so bad so often has such a propensity to want to be thought of, you know, in a positive light. And
do something like this, which it certainly doesn't put them in a positive light.
At all. Like, I don't think Michael really thought about it. I think he was like, oh, people are going to think this is great. And people are like, you got to do that for a 25-year-old man. And the 25-year-old man's like, yeah, I'll just, whatever. Like,
right. He'll sign it. And then, I mean, there's a lot to be said. Ian Rappaport, when he reported it, he said, Kyler's already doing that. He already does that. So as a player, if it's something you're already doing, you're like, sure. Now, as an agent, should the agent have ever allowed that to be put in there? Probably not. Because,
no.
Because what that's doing is just opening up your player that you represent. One, to undo criticism. Two, it's giving the team a potential out. If they wanted to find an out, they could do it. That said, I kind of get... So here's what we know about Michael Bidwell. One, this is the largest contract that has ever been given to a Cardinals player in franchise history. So we're talking over 100 years. This is a big deal to Bidwell and Bidwell's family money. That matters. Now, granted, the NFL franchises make money, gobs and gobs and gobs and gobs and gobs of money. That said, it's not like you just want to throw away that money. And so it... You have to think of it one way or another. Did they put it in because he isn't studying? Because if he isn't studying, why would you pay him that much money? Like, if you doubt his study habits, why'd you pay him that much? Two, he's just including, like, he is listening to public perception. Whether or not it has been brought up to him by Keim or Kingsbury specifically would be the one to bring it up. That he's not studying enough, which we, you know, Cliff said himself on Tuesday, they don't track. They do not track their players' study amount, which is kind of an interesting thing to do. That said, he under has heard
now.
The whispers, has heard the criticism. Oh, he doesn't study. He can't read defenses. He can't see over. He can't see the middle of the field. He's a bad leader. And all of that public perception he's just putting in there, to, you know, on one hand, it's a level of accountability for someone of his particular politics. You might disagree, but it is also one of personal accountability. And so while maybe it's not a concern, but because that concern is in the public eye, he's including that. Just as a little bit of protection in case things go badly. And it's not like I necessarily disagree. It's just a really, I don't understand why the Cardinals have a franchise quarterback, a young franchise quarterback for like the first time in their history, at least since Arizona, legit. Like, Jake Plummer was fun for a year. He wasn't that good.
They also paid Jake Plummer, like, immediately.
That's true. And the way they've – the things that have come out about Murray from the organization, like the immature, the finger pointer, the bad leader, that Chris Mortensen reported. That's curiously bad. Like, why would you let that get in the public about your franchise quarterback? And then why would you put something like this? Because now, it by all means, was Michael Bidwill who insisted in this, and people in the organization tried to do it. But you know what? I don't know. It's just weird. That said, that's not the only interesting thing about his contract. It's the only, I think, really odd one. They have a very strong baseball clause, which is understandable.
Right.
It
makes me laugh. I mean,
it does. It does. Because, like,
I get it. I get why, but it just makes me laugh.
It's just removes because, you know, one of our friends on another network, you know, has suggested that Kyler would use the baseball leverage against the team. And Bidwill has just made it so that there is zero baseball leverage at all. If Kyler is going to even remotely entertain the idea of doing anything baseball, then it will void his contract. It will void his guarantee. So that there's just no leverage that way. That way, even if it wasn't so, if Kyler's unhappy with how things are going with the team, he can't even whisper, I'm just going to go play baseball. That's just taken off the table. I kind of want to talk about as well is if you look at the incentive bonus. Well, some of the bonuses and the incentive bonuses, if you thought anything was interesting, they tied up more than $9 million in workout bonuses basically to ensure to make him commit, if he wants that money, to being with the team during the offseason program. This is a record. I don't think there's ever been a contract where there was this much money tied into workout bonuses. And the truth is, Cardinals almost never do workout bonuses. That they moved away from doing workout bonuses because the way that works is that if a player comes in during the offseason program and participates in 90%, then they get a certain amount. And the most you'll see usually on a Cardinals contract is $25,000, $50,000. But here it goes, starting next year, $1 million. $1.86 million, then $1.8 million, and then $1.8 million the last 2 years. And you know what this stems from. It's from his not being part of the offseason program this year, even though this was all negotiation related.
Yeah, and that's kind of how it works, right? Like, something happens once and you're like, don't do it again. Let's put this in a contract. And so, yeah, it's just interesting. I mean, a lot of it feels like unnecessary work. And I think that's what people are getting caught up in. People are like, why would Kyler sign that? Because he was going to do it.
Right.
So, like, he doesn't care. And like, I think that's what people struggle with, is this whole idea of, like, you know, what's he doing? And, you know, is he putting in enough effort and this and that and the other? And it's like, no, it's really fine. Like, he has no problem putting the time and putting the effort in, doing all of this stuff. You know, you guys, the fans, the media are the ones that are like, oh, they had to put a clause in because he's lazy. It's like, no, like, if he was lazy, he wouldn't have let the clause be put in.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so, he wouldn't tie that much money to being.
No, if he wasn't planning on being there. And the thing that's, you know, the Cardinals are committing to him. He's now committing to the Cardinals. So the issue this offseason was a negotiation ploy. Oh, you're not committing to me? Well, then I'm not going to be there for the part I don't have to be there for. And then he still showed up for part of the part he didn't need to be there for. And then he didn't even do like what Chandler Jones did, who showed up to minicamp and didn't do anything. He was on the field. And so the Cardinals didn't need to do this. The fact that they're paying him this amount of money is committing to him. And if they're committing to him, he's committed to the team. There was never any doubt about that. That I found that an oddity. I did find a couple of things interesting, and that's the incentive bonuses. I was very intrigued by the fact that the only statistical incentive had nothing to do with passing yards. It was only about rushing yards, which this tells me, now whether this is, I would think this is more about the Cardinals you know, knowing the talents that he has, if he wants to get $750,000 extra per year, he needs to have 600 rushing yards and 6 touchdowns. It's something he did in 2020, but not last year and not his rookie year. But it's really interesting in the fact that they didn't tie anything passing, any statistical passing stat to bonuses, and it's all about achievement with running the ball to sort of incentivize him to keep his full talents unlocked. Not necessarily because we've seen him try to not run. It's what it felt like. His rookie year felt like he was purposefully not running the ball. And there were a couple of times last season, especially when he was a little banged up, he was it seemed loath to do it, like he didn't want to do it. And in this case, I kind of like it, because if that matters to him, then he will unlock that. But it's not, we're talking $750,000 on more on a deal like when he's making, $40 million a year.
Right. And that'll be what's interesting to watch and kind of, like you said, to like pay attention to is like, how does he go about this and what does it look like? And, you know, again, I think I'm interested just in general of what he's going to, from a stylistic standpoint, what his style will look like moving forward, because, you know, he has been so effective in this league, and I wonder if it'll continue to be something where he oscillates depending on the game and the opponent and how he, you know, gets all of that factored into what he's doing.
The one other part is I kind of called it in our group chat. I think it was Blake who said it first, but I liked it. It's a Nick Foles clause. The other $750,000 he can get per year, starting next. So it's the next following year if you do it this year, is if the Cardinals go to the Super Bowl, but he has to have played 70% of the snaps during the season and playing 70% of the snaps in the NFC title game. So it couldn't be a case like Carson Wentz, who got hurt, and then Nick Foles took them through the playoffs. Like, Carson Wentz played enough in the regular season, the Eagles make it to the Super Bowl, but it was Nick Foles who did it. Therefore, if Murray wants to get his money, they need to. And I have zero problem with it. I just think it's funny. So they are tying some money up to a combination of team success and durability. I think it's fine. I have no problem with it. I just think it's funny.
Yeah, it is kind of funny. Like, the whole, like, deep dive into contracts in general is funny. And this is especially funny one because it just seems, because we waited for it so long and it is such a large contract, and then you put on top of it, there are a number of people that still do not like Kyler Murray, that it's like we're nitpicking every little thing in there instead of being like, hey, this is done, we're ready to start, you know, going and getting this franchise. I mean, think about it. Like, I was talking to a buddy, and the Cardinals in their history have never had a 9-year plan. Now, maybe the plan doesn't work and it gets, you know, messed up and it ends up being, you know, they end up firing everybody and moving on. But like, they're going into 2022, year 4 of Cliff and Kyler and Keim together, and they're going into 2022 with the idea that this is going to be who leads them into 2027, 2028. Like, we haven't seen that before.
No, it's really,
because even with Arians, it was like, how much time does Palmer have left? You know, and then it started to become, can Arians make it another year? Like
before, like, yeah.
And so you just, yeah, like you just look at it and like, this is, I mean, again, it may not work and that's okay, but at least they have a direction that they're heading and you have to be excited about the direction because that, or you're just not going to follow the team for the next 5 or 6 years.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Best Star Cardinals Talk on the Web, everybody's favorite topic, uniforms and helmets. They've got a new helmet. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Best Star Cardinals Talk on the Web. The Cardinals announced, finally, the other teams. So fans for years have been begging for uniforms. Fans, I don't think you're going to get them anytime soon. And especially, honestly, I think it's especially with the new helmet. So the NFL allowed, so a year ago, decided that it would end its rule that limits teams to having one helmet only and changed it so that they could have one alternate helmet. And we've seen throughout the offseason many teams announcing throwback helmets or alternate helmets, red and black. The Falcons will have their red throwback. The Texans are having a red alternate. Several teams are going black. And then finally, on Sunday, the Cardinals announced their alternate black helmet, which they will wear three times. They will wear with their black alternate uniforms and their black color rush uniform. So they will wear it in their nationally televised preseason game against the Baltimore Ravens. They will wear it in week 5. So that will be with the alternate black, which is the black with the white numbering. They will have it with the same black alternate in week 5 against the Eagles. And then when they play on Thursday night in week 7, return of DeAndre Hopkins against the Saints, they will wear their color rush black uniforms with the red numbering with the black helmet. Kind of cool. I know we're not big on helmets, but do you like the helmet? I wanted to ask you that. Do you like the helmet?
Yeah, I thought it was well done. I thought it was something that came that was unique and that gave them something different than what else is being done out there. Most teams are just doing an alternate color type thing, and that looks sharp. And like you said, you know, you gave the list, and you've got the Bears going with orange, and the Texans going with red, and the Cardinals chose to do something different, and that's unique, and that's what makes this more fun, right? Like, they went with the black with the specs of.
And like I think it's really cool because, you know, college, you know, Arizona State fans, we see that the Sun Devils wearing different helmets all the time. One of their coolest ones has the gold with the maroon with the gold flex, and it's fantastic. And I think this is fantastic. And I'll tell you this, I don't care about uniforms, but I will say this about the alternate blacks. I think they look really good up close. But from a TV viewing, because there's just a little bit of red, you can't see from the television. And with the white helmets, it looked like you have a whole bunch of black and white players on the field. With the black helmet, with the black uniforms, I think it will look really cool. And I think it'll be the same thing with the color rush uniform. Although, you know, from a press point of view, the red lettering is difficult from the press box to see the number clearly, but that is not a stylistic thing. That is a practical thing from this 45-year-old man trying to see who's lined up and who's making plays from across the stadium on in the press box. And white lettering, right numbering is so much easier to read on black than red lettering with no outline.
Yeah, guys, remember, chess is old. Stop picking on it.
But you know,
no, I think that's the thing. It's like, I think some of the things that they've done have been ineffective, or, you know, not ineffective, but like it didn't hit the mark. It wasn't a home run. But you look at these, and I think that they're unique. They're done well. They're done differently than what most teams are doing, which, you know, is always fun to see, like when your team actually comes out with something. You know, we joke a lot that like you can't tell the difference between the Cardinals and the 49ers color rush uniforms, was it or like there was two that looked really, or like maybe it was the Falcons and the Cardinals color rush uniforms, and like there were a couple that just looked really similar, and so this is like unique and different, and you know, it's something that can excite fans that are interested in changing the uniforms and seeing something different.
Now, do you think that this is a precursor to the uniforms? Are Cardinals fans going to ever get new uniforms for the Cardinals?
I would say in a couple of years I could see them. I don't see anything right now. We know
no, it's not happening right now.
We just talked about Michael Bidwill. It's an interesting thing what he has his ear to the ground for and what he doesn't. And uniforms is just not
Kyler
high
Murray's
on that
study
list.
Habits, yes. New uniforms, nope. Which is really, if there's one thing Cardinals fans have been asking for, and it's new uniforms. But I will say this: I don't mind. I like the uniforms, but I'm not a uniform guy. And here's the thing: if you get good new uniforms, sometimes they stink, which would be tragic if after years of people begging for new uniforms, they get a design they don't like. Because there are uniforms that don't look good, sadly.
Right, exactly.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Mr. Herb Cardinals Talk of the Wet. Let's start talking about training camp. We're going to focus on, initially, injuries of concern, and then players that we are watching that we are going to focus on in training camp. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, special Cardinals Talk on the Web, and we're going to move on to actual training camp. This is the training camp preview, but this training camp preview was taken over by the talk of Kyler Murray's deal and alternate helmets. They reported for training camp today, on Tuesday. There are some injuries to watch. One is obviously Max Williams coming back from the ACL tear. He's on PUP. They announced on Tuesday Hollywood Brown. This is the bad news. Has a hamstring injury that he apparently suffered during the break, and therefore it is a non-football injury, and so he was placed on NFI. He was unable to pass his physical. And those are the two players that are designated with injuries. I think of note as well is to see, obviously, Zach Allen passed his physical, but his ankle recovery and J.J. Watt's shoulder obviously will be things to watch. Are you worried about the Hollywood Brown injury?
No, because I just read today that this is pretty common for him to miss parts of training camp.
Oh.
I was beforehand, and then I read that, and I was like, oh, this is like a yearly thing. So just get ready for it for every year, basically. And so that's the thing is like, yeah, beforehand I was like, man, this is a huge deal. Like they, and then you're like, oh, well, he does it every year. Never mind.
And the fact is,
and it's a hamstring.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's a big thing because there was, I believe it was a year or two ago that Max Williams started on NFI. Maybe it was last year or the year before. And he was, came off of it like 3 days later. He wasn't able to pass his physical initially, and it was final. And so it might be a simple case. He needs 3 more days rest before he tests it out. Or it could mean a week, it could mean 2. I just hope it's a minor hamstring, like a minor normal hamstring thing that happens and not kind of a severe hamstring thing. Because, you know, hamstring issues for speed guys are a big deal.
Bad ideas.
And and he's the guy you don't want to miss because you're already down Hopkins and you kind of feel confident with the receiving core when you've got Hollywood and Rondell and A.J. Green and Zach Ertz kind of honing in there for that first 6 weeks. You're comfortable that they can be competent and to decent to be able to hold the fort till DeAndre comes back and that offense becomes elite. If he has to miss significant time, that just stinks because you're like, ah, Hollywood, we're going to see him. Kyler's going to work with him. And then, no, hamstring. Any other injury that stands out to you? Obviously, we don't have injuries, but people coming back from injuries that you're kind of keeping an eye on.
Yeah, I want to see what Gardeck looks like. You know, he was kind of slow last year, but that's not unexpected with his style of play coming off a knee injury. I'm interested what Rodney Hudson looks like just from a ability to move standpoint. Like, is he done or is he a guy that can come back and contribute? So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. But outside of that, I mean, obviously there's the Watt thing, but I mean, how much can we talk about it?
Right. Well, and here's the thing. Hey, remember last year he did the run test, passed, tweaked his hamstring, missed all training camp. Hey, he didn't get put on PUP today.
Baby steps.
Now, I also want to talk about what I want to talk about before we get into battles and things like that. Who are the particular players that you have your eyes on this training camp? Who are you focused on individually this year?
You know, it'll be interesting. There's a couple. Like I said, Rodney Hudson's a big one. I mean, I thought those first four games before he went down, this was just a different offense. And people will be like, well, it was just the first four games. The NFL caught up to him. And maybe that's slightly it. But, like, the running game, the passing game, like, just the effort of
– the offense looked easy.
Yeah, that's – like, it was just – it was just humming against good teams. And so, you know, that's one. I mean, I don't think anybody's not going to be staring directly at Isaiah Simmons and Zaven Collins, right? Like,
yeah,
I know it's just Collins year two, but it's kind of put up or shut up time at this point. Like these guys,
he has to be at least competent.
Right. Like he has to at least be close to Simmons last year.
Yeah.
And Simmons has to continue to grow. Like you can't have Simmons get worse because he's not playing next to somebody that's competent and then Collins not be competent, because then you're just like, oh no.
Right.
So the, you know, obviously those two guys. And then, I mean, realistically, you're just going to be watching the cornerback room, right? Like one, knock on wood, health, but two, like who steps up? Like
exactly.
we know it's Byron and Marco, but like,
and Marco's one of the players I'm really watching, because you how they gushed about him coming out of the draft, and then the fact that they turned to him so early last year. He definitely had his ups and downs, and there were a lot of downs late in the year, but that first half of the season, he wasn't making mistakes. And now a year in, year two, still that explosiveness. I'm really interested to see how he develops in year two. If he can become a, not just a non-mistake guy, but a playmaker. Like last year, he didn't give up many plays early, and he had so many almost plays. Can he be a playmaker this year? I want to see what he looks like in camp this year.
Yeah, and like you said, he's got to make that jump. They need him to be a guy that steps up, and also, you know, is a guy that – lockdown's a strong word, obviously, but is a guy that gives them a very good corner and allows the team to be a little less concerned. Because here's the thing. And we'll talk about it, obviously, but like if your pass rush isn't great and you have suspect corner play, I mean, we could be looking at a lot of 40 to
like
35 games. Yeah.
Like those Colts teams.
Right. And so like it's just a matter of bringing that one of those positions kind of hitting, and we'll see which one it is.
I think everyone will also be watching Eno Benjamin, which is – it's exciting for local fans. And the fact that Cliff Kingsbury, unsolicited multiple times, gave pointed specific praise to Eno's play, and then went as far as saying it looks like he could be a starting running back. Again, I want to say him saying that does not mean he's going to beat out James Conner and get all those carries. No, I don't think that's going to happen. But the fact that he looks like he could be a starting running back, I think all eyes will be on Benjamin. And I think he's the guy that I think the part of the organization, fans are all rooting to win the number two spot, even though, like, with a resume like Darrell Williams, like, he should be the number two guy because he does everything moderately well.
Right. And he's a guy that can fill in a pinch and give you – be a guy that contributes and has strong, you know, strong games where he's putting up 75 rushing yards and 45 receiving yards.
I want to see – so the top three rookies that they got, so Trey McBride, Cameron Thomas, Myjai Sanders, those are all players I'm very intrigued in seeing. And then – I'll save that for the training camp battles, the position battles. But those are kind of like what you've said and what I've said. Those are kind of the players that I've got my eyes on in particular. Also, one other player, Josh Jones. What are we going to see from him this year?
Yeah, and where are they going to use him? Is he going to be the lead, like, first guy off the bench at a number of places? You know, or is it going to be he's the right tackle backup and we're not moving him type thing?
I will say this. So I did see repping at left tackle in some of the offseason works, if that means anything. But coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, Spencer of Cardinals Talk, the one we'll wrap up this show. Let's talk about position battles that there are available. And that. So we'll wrap up talking about where are there battles for playing time, battles for the roster. That's coming next on Rise Up C-Red. You're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Mr. Cardinals Talk on the web. Position battles, starting battles, roster battles. For you, what is the number one position battle that there is? I can think of two in particular that are like the biggest position battles, because it's not just position, but it's starting battles.
Yeah. It's tough because you look at it and it's nothing like jumps off the page, but I am interested first off to kind of see if who is the pass rusher opposite Marcus Golden.
Yes. Right. That's one, like, of them for me.
Is it going to be Devon Kennard? Is it going to be a guy like Dennis Gardeck? Or are one of the rookies going to step up in Cameron Thomas and Myjai Sanders? I think we both personally would like to see it be Kennard, because that means he's playing at the level that especially you expected him to when they signed him.
Yeah.
But I don't think that we have this disillusion that he's a guy that's going to all of a sudden turn into, you know, Marcus Golden 2.0.
Right. And, you know, it would be fantastic if Cameron Thomas immediately becomes good. But, you know, the way they have things set up right now, and we mentioned this on the show last week, they're going to need a committee of production to kind of not replace Chandler Jones' impact, but maybe his production. Now, he had 10.5 sacks last year. We said if between Gardeck, Kennard, and the two rookies can get 14 sacks, you're in a good place, because that means they're splitting time, and that means pretty much you're getting 14 sacks from the other side while Golden gets his double digits. Now, I think it's a perfect world in terms of if you're not going to have a dynamic player to play every down like Chandler Jones basically could, to have a strong base player. And I think Devon Kennard will be a strong base player for them early in the season, and then allow Gardeck and then your other young players to then specialize on just rushing the passer. Cameron Thomas has the potential, because of his versatility, that he could be a set the edge kind of guy. But Kennard is that he's strong at that. He's smart. And so an interesting thing that Vance Joseph said is that on base downs, Golden will actually have more opportunities to rush the passer, as opposed to last year where on base downs he was doing more edge setting, allowing Jones to rush the passer, because you would always have of course you're going to have Chandler Jones rush the passer. But if you switch the roles, and now on those base downs where Vance said you also have a better opportunity at getting sacks in those ones. So you have Kennard setting the edge, and you send Golden to the passer, and then you can bring in the other guys as rotational pass rushers and to see what they get there. But yes, outside linebacker, that one spot. I say also the most important position battle is at cornerback, not for the starting two, but for cornerback three, because it is, losing Jeff Gladney was tragic, and it just changed how plans were, because he was going to come in and be a younger Robert Alford. He was going to be their cornerback three. He was going to come in a nickel so that Byron could slide into the slot and Gladney could play outside. That was the plan. That was the plan that they had. Now you've got a competition between Antonio Hamilton, Josh Jackson, Breon Borders, couple of undrafted guys over the last 2 years, and then your seventh round pick, Christian Mathieu. That does not feel like a great position battle for cornerback three, honestly. Josh Jackson has starting experience, but he only played special teams last year, and he's kind of fallen off what he was. He would be a perfect one. If you had to pick someone to win that job, he'd be the perfect one to do it, because he can play on the boundary and allow Byron to slide inside. Breon Borders has starting experience as well, but we saw him in limited playing time. There's nothing about Breon Borders that excites me. Antonio Hamilton was solid in his playing time. He wasn't spectacular. He was competent. The problem is, if you want to maximize your quarterbacks, if he plays, you're playing him in the slot, which means you're keeping Byron Murphy on the border, on the boundary, which you are losing what the team believes is you're taking him out of his strongest place.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because I think more than anything with a corner position is that you're looking at who steps up. Because like we talked about, we know what Byron Murphy is. We're still hoping he takes a step next year and becomes, you know, closer to a top 15 corner in the NFL. But who takes that step and gives you that guy opposite Murph? And if it's, you know, if it's Marco, that's great. That's obviously ideal. But then it's from there, it's who is it? And like you look at it, like you said, the names don't inspire confidence. And the one that has the most, that feels like the best chance, is Josh Jackson, right? Like, he's got the most experience. He wasn't bad coming out of Iowa. He's kind of the opposite of Marco, right? Where he's not a great athlete, but he's good in zone and keeping things in front of him. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how this all plays out, and if there's a veteran that they spike the drink with, right?
Yeah, they could always bring back Rob Alford. There's another guy, but the cornerback market out there, it's old guys.
It's guys that don't want to play right now.
It's a bunch of old guys. Secondary kind of, you know, roster spots. I think the most intriguing one on offense is going to be running back too, because you got Darrell Williams and Eno Benjamin. That's going to be fun to watch because it's a skill position. I'm interested in the backup center job. Is it going to be Sean Harlow or is Lasita Smith going to be able to, is he going to do enough in camp for the team to say, okay, we're going to put him behind Hudson?
And that would be ballsy. I mean, but the thing is, Harlow was not good last year. Like, and that's not his fault, like, by any means, but he wasn't great. You know, you mentioned the running back position. I'm also interested in kind of the end of the depth chart, because like you said, like, Williams, Benjamin's going to be interesting, but do they keep four? And if they keep four, is it going to be Jonathan Ward, who has been on the roster as a special teams guy, gotten some, you know,
limited offense.
Limited, yeah. Or do they keep a guy like Keontae Ingram, who's more of a James Conner clone in terms of size? Or do they look for something completely different, like Pledger or Ronnie Rivers, who are, you know, smaller special teams scat back guys? Like, it's intriguing to me just how the back end of the roster is going to fill out.
Yeah, the receiver position, who's going to fill that back end? Is Andy Isabella going to be able to sneak his way onto the roster again because of DeAndre Hopkins' suspension, or is it going to be Greg Dortch? I feel like Antoine Wesley is probably close to a lock. Close. They seem to really, really like him. How much does Trey McBride play? And then this minor stuff on the back end. And
it's nice that we don't have the old Cardinal stuff or, like, I don't even know what's going to happen here.
Mostly it's the back of the roster stuff. So at safety, you've got your two starters, Jalen Thompson, Buda Baker. And I think Charles Washington is fairly close to a lock, but it depends on whether they keep four or five safeties. Is James Wiggins going to do enough to supplant Deontay Thompson as the primary backup to play defense in addition to special teams?
Yeah, and you look at it, we know Charles Washington's, I mean, he feels like a lock, doesn't he?
Yeah, because, like... Yeah, he does to me.
And so you look at it, you know, you have to like what Washington brings. Are they going to keep five safeties because they don't have five corners? I mean, is that something that they could do where I don't know, man. You mentioned the wide receiver thing. Is Victor Bolden going to make the roster as a return man?
That's a possibility, although... Like any time you bring in from those lesser leagues, I'm not super excited.
Well, but you got to remember, he returned kicks for the 49ers.
Yes, he did. He did. But
to your point, yeah, like it's not.
I don't get that excited. It is excited for them, and it's fun to see them because we've seen player after player come from with these lesser leagues and come in, but they stand out in those leagues because they're better than those players. But I liked watching the USFL a little bit, but really it's like watching third and fourth preseason games.
Yeah, it is. What about, here's one that I actually wrote about today. So, you know, it's Simmons and Collins. Mm-hmm. They just brought in Nick Vigil, but Ben Neiman's probably the next best linebacker. I mean, I know Tanner Vallejo has been good for them and he knows the defense, but Neiman played quite a bit in Kansas City and has a lot more experience. Do you think Neiman replaces like a Joe Walker?
I think Neiman, Walker, and Vallejo honestly are battling for the same spot.
That's what I was curious about.
Because I think Zeke Turner is a lock, so you've got Simmons, Collins, Vigil are locks. You've got Turner that's a lock. And if you're going to go with one more inside backer, Neiman, Walker, Vallejo are kind of the same player.
Yeah, right. And so like you're looking at how this works out, and yeah, I'm just interested. I mean, it's really,
could this be the year that Joe Walker doesn't make the Cardinals?
Right, exactly. It's crazy.
he's like interesting. And okay, as a fan of players, you love to see a player like Joe Walker, like A.Q. Shipley, players them like them who just stick around somehow. You don't necessarily, as a fan, want them on the field, but they're smart enough to get on the field and their coaches trust them, but they're not good enough. But they're not good enough to not be looking for a replacement. Joe Walker is a guy that the team is looking to replace every single year. A.Q. Shipley was the same way. They would draft a center to take over A.Q. Shipley. He was good enough that he was going to play, and he was trusted, and he was solid on the field because he knew everything he needed to do. But he was always a guy they were looking to replace. And Joe Walker is one of those guys, and he's managed to turn a very, very solid little NFL career for himself. So good for him. So we'll see if it's Neiman, if it's Vallejo, if it's Joe Walker that can make the squad this year. Obviously, Vallejo and Walker have what seemingly implicit trust from Vance Joseph and Billy Davis. We'll see if Ben Neiman can do that for them.
Yeah, and that's the thing is you look at it. The other thing I'm interested in is, you know, we assume it's going to be Watt and Allen. Does Lawrence stay healthy enough to win that job? Because I know that's who they want to win the job.
If there is a player that I could stress just how much the team likes, they love Rashard Lawrence. They believe he could be a very good player in the league. It's one of the weirdest things. He's a fourth round pick. Nothing about him really stands out, but this team, if he can stay healthy, they have super high hopes about Rashard Lawrence. We're not talking like J.J. Watt or like Pro Bowl All Pro, but they believe he has the ability to be a very solid player.
Yeah, and when you're talking about a nose tackle, that's kind of all you want, right? You want a guy that you want a Corey Peters type, and that's what they've been trying to find, and that's why Corey Peters always ends up back on the roster.
Yeah, you know, minor thing to watch. What do they do at quarterback? Are they going to keep three quarterbacks on the roster this year?
Yeah, I'm really interested in that too, because McSorley is like a poor man's Colt McCoy. So it's interesting how long he's going to go for.
Because the Cardinals are always looking, at the third quarterback position. They liked Strevler, but after a year and a half, they were done with Strevler. And so they're like, hey, let's look like McSorley. Now they've had, you know, the last few games of last year and then the offseason to see what it looks like. He's a guy that probably would take a roster spot, or do they instead go with the kid, Jared Grantano, the undrafted kid, or after final cuts, they have their eye on another young quarterback that they can sign to the practice squad so that they don't burn a roster spot when they have other positions they need to do it. Honestly, if I'm roster building, I prefer to do it that way, is only keep two quarterbacks on your active roster and look at young guys to develop on the practice squad. That's me. I think it's weird to keep three quarterbacks on the roster when you're only going to have two active on game day.
I wonder if McSorley would make it back to the practice squad.
I mean, maybe. He was on the Ravens practice squad last year. But it would be interesting as well, because if he were to get cut, Baltimore might bring him back. Because they wanted to keep him. They just didn't. They would have elevated, and that's one of the things he had in an interview in the offseason, is that they would have signed him to the active roster if they could. They just were having too many injury issues at the time, so they couldn't afford to put him on the roster. And that's why they let him go to the Cardinals, because they would have put him on the roster. They like him. So if the Cardinals cut him, I could totally see the Ravens bringing him back and him being completely okay with going back to the Ravens.
Here's another one that's interesting to me. So we feel like the tight end position's locked in, Ertz, McBride, Williams. Who makes the roster if Williams starts out on the pup?
Probably Steven Anderson. Probably.
That's what I was thinking too. I mean, because Sykovitz can stay on the roster as the exemption guy still, right? I think he's got 1 year left of that.
Does he? Because this year, I think it was only 1 year he got the exemption. Not that he would necessarily get drawn. Like, he could be a practice squad guy, because their exemption guy is that African
Hagi
Nibuisi or something.
So, because the reason I ask is, I'm wondering if Wells makes the roster again, because he played a little bit last year for him. He's more of a blocking inline tight end. The kid from San Diego State,
yeah.
You know, so I just, I mean, you look at it, he was activated for
played like two snaps and then got hurt.
Yeah, he was activated for four games last year, week 8, and then he was active week 15, 16, and 17. So, you know, it's just interesting to look at, like, because we know what their plan is, but how does that plan alter? And then, like you said, you've got the running backs, you've got, you know, but it's all, we're talking depth and stuff like that. So,
yep. And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. We will probably give next, unless something happens significant to start the weekend of training camp, we will probably push the next show to leading up to the first preseason game, because you won't see much this weekend, because the first practice that we can see isn't until Saturday and then Monday, because then they'll have Sunday off. So they're probably, we will say tentatively, our next show is in 2 weeks, unless something big happens between now and then. And with that, that wraps up episode 366 of the Rise Up Secret podcast. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Unless something happens, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.